many courts have what's called early resolution, which is option number two in a lot of cases. And it's a chance to speak to a prosecutor before a matter is set for trial. And it allows several things to happen.
Many courts have early resolution. Who knew? That was Joel, paralegal extraordinaire. He's my guest this week on the Dog on It Trucking podcast. Let's get on with the show. Welcome to the Dog on It Trucking podcast. When it comes to trucking safety, the dog is on it. What do we do on this show? I get to talk to some of the most influential trucking executives in our industry so that we can pick up new tips and tricks to use in our everyday businesses. So with that, let's get on with the show. Hey, Joel, welcome to the Dog on It Trucking podcast. How in the heck are you?
Mr. Chris Harris, I'm doing well this morning. I can't thank you enough for having me.
Hey, it's my pleasure. And I love getting paralegals on the show because some people don't seem to understand how important it is to reduce their convictions on their CVOR. But before we get into all that, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? I mean, I know that I think you were a officer with the Windsor Police Department, were you not?
That is correct, my friend. I was a police officer for a total of 11 years, and seven of those was with Windsor Police, and four of them were the Orangeville Police Department, and they were both municipal police services. And after about the eight-year mark, my career, not perhaps the ninth year, I decided to go back to school to get my paralegal ticket part-time. And that was back in 2010 when I started that, and I completed in 2012. And ever since then, I've been in the court system pretty well on a full-time basis. And I specialize predominantly about 75% of my business is for carriers. I have some specialty training background with reconstructive services in terms of piecing back together a collision. And some of the other courses that I took at the Ontario Police College and through Windsor Police and Orangeville Police have led quite well and beneficially to defending carriers and clients alike.
Didn't you also tell me that you are, or were, when you were a police officer, you were CVSA certified?
I'm not fully CVSA certified. However, in Windsor, as you can imagine, we have an absolute pile of trucking traffic that we had on a regular basis through the NAFTA pipeline. And the flow of regular transport trucks was consistent. So any enforcement you did, half the time was going to involve anything to do with CVOR program, and some of the courses that I took along the way were beneficial in that. But CVSA certification is its own designation, which came out a little bit later than my policing career. However, some of the precursory courses I do have along the way that have been beneficial.
Okay, and just for our viewers and listeners, CVSA is Commercial Vehicle Safety Alliance, and it operates in three countries, Mexico, United States, and Canada. So that's what I was referring to. But you've had commercial courses, have you not, in the way of trucking and enforcement?
Some of the carriers that I look after have been very fortunate in asking me to partake in some of the courses that they have through the Ontario Safety League. So I do have some brake courses that I've taken, and some of the other courses that I took prior to that were, you can only get them through enforcement agencies, which is the Ontario Police College, and reconstruction training was one of those designations that I have that's been quite beneficial when it comes to collisions, etc. And the program has really taken off in the last, obviously with the last 5 years with the advent of ELDs, etc. The need for, I think, a paralegal with some skill set that from a previous career has only served me well and my clients as well.
Yeah, and I got to believe that accident investigation must serve you well when you're defending what may be an inappropriate ticket as a result of a crash.
Correct. Hey, undoubtedly, it has led to some fantastic results for clients. And I think the other important part is the credibility with the courts. And once you've established yourself throughout the province as being a reputable, honest paralegal who does not I don't want to say fiddle with the system, but you don't ask for disclosure or evidence you've already got. If you don't ask for it too many times, you're in good shape. You never want to kind of badger the court system or have a reputation for doing that. So I think a lot of the times it's lent well for my clients as well as my reputation. It serves well. But the accident reconstruction side has been, unfortunately, the last 2 years, much busier than I had hoped for. The OPP released its numbers last week in relation to commercial motor vehicles and collisions, and it was the busiest year ever for both fatalities and number of collisions reported, which is not something that we're striving for with the safety programs and the safety compliance departments and the carriers I deal with. And as you know, it's a company's footprint is only as good as its safety compliance department, and what you do for a living is certainly enhancing that for many carriers. And what I do for a living is, I don't want to say it's damage control, but it certainly is an educational experience for all around. And I think it, for the most part, is lent well for at least the carriers that I represent. There's always going to be the carriers that don't want to invest the time or the money into proper training that the drivers deserve and require. But those are also the ones that I think during this unique COVID times are probably being weeded out a little bit more quickly than the properly run carriers.
Well, I was talking to an insurance broker friend of mine this week, and as you may or may not know, I don't know if you're aware that the insurance market right now is what they call a hard market. He's aware of 14 companies this month in Ontario alone that are going to be closing up shop because of non-renewal of insurance.
And that is exceptionally problematic, and absolutely, it's been a hard market for quite some time, and I think a lot of the people that you mingle with in the insurance industry are the same ones that I do. And I think overall, people like yourself and myself and our viewers, we want to be traveling the 400 series highways knowing that we're not behind a carrier that is, maybe we know a bit too much about or that we don't feel is as safe as they could be. And it's nice to know that some of the lesser ones that are not inclined to follow the rules are being weeded out. I think it's to everybody's advantage. And I know a lot of the carriers that I represent are also acquiring some of these struggling lesser carriers that weren't following the rules the way we perhaps want. So the hard market is kind of good in weeding out those that we probably don't want to conduct business with, or even, like I said, be driving anywhere near on a highway. So I'm not surprised that 14 are going to the wayside, and I've heard of many more cases as well.
Well, as I say, that's just in this month. And what are we on, as we're taping this? This is the 22nd or 21st of July?
Today is the 20th. Well, it's kind of pathetic that we both have to look, but it's the 22nd today. But as you know, with this COVID situation, time is not as precisely being kept, nor is the old date calendar. So it's not been a surprise that since March 15th, really, when the whole COVID thing kind of came full bore in our country, that these carriers are falling to the wayside. And even in a hard market, when there's reduced freight to be distributed amongst the carriers, if you're paying a premium that's in a facility or a high-risk market, that alone would be enough to scare any carrier that's kind of on edge and teetering towards bankruptcy or foreclosure, probably enough to push them out of the picture entirely. So I think that trend will continue until we, I don't want to use the word normal, but I think until we return to, you know, a level of freight being delivered that was semi-resemblant to what we had prior to this entire COVID explosion.
Well, the freight, I'm reading stuff that it is almost back to where it was prior to COVID. But I really want to know how COVID has affected you and your company. Well, before we get into that, what made you start a paralegal company? Why did you leave the force and go on your own?
Well, I think after 11 years of policing, it certainly has its trials and tribulations in terms of just working shift work. For the last 4 years of my career, I was predominantly working night shift, which was 6 p.m. to 6 a.m., it's not the best for your social life, your family, your home life, and it wasn't conducive, I think, to me enduring a 30-year career. But it was well scheduled and well planned out, and I knew what I wanted to do afterwards. And about 3 years prior to actually leaving the Orangeville Police Service, I'd already embarked on the scholastic side of getting my paralegal ticket, and the natural transition was to stick to what you know. And what I knew extensively was that I'd responded to hundreds of accidents throughout my career, and certainly was involved in a lot of different enforcement blitzes with both Windsor and Orangeville. And I just thought it was a natural transition, which is, it's lent very well. I mean, if you stick to what you know, or if you know one thing really well, and you're an honest person who runs an honest business, I think all the wrinkles kind of iron themselves out. And that's the nice thing about representing over 100 carriers is that I have a good reputation as being knowledgeable and fair, and I don't break the wallets in terms of the driver and the carriers. I know I provide a fair service for a fair price, and it just seemed like a natural transition, and no regrets on that decision, Chris, whatsoever.
Well, there's only, from my personal point of view, there's only two paralegals when people say, hey, you know, I need to fight a ticket. Who do I talk to? There's only two that come to mind, and you're on that list. So
thank you for that vote of confidence. It's very flattering to know that the people in the know like yourself that are good at what they do equally in their own right is a very, thank you. That's a flattering thing to say, and it's nice to hear those things. So I appreciate your compliments.
As they say, we were talking yesterday as I was recommending to a client not far from you to fight a speeding ticket. You know, I understand it, but can you go over how things like a speeding ticket, and which I thought it was a two-pointer, and you mentioned, no, Chris, you're an idiot, it's wrong. can you mention or talk about how the CVUR clients or listeners may know it's constructed of three items, collisions, convictions, and inspections, but how specifically do convictions affect the overall CVUR?
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned the word speeding, because as you're probably well aware of, last week from the 15th to the 21st, I believe, were the official dates, there was a North American-wide blitz for speeding without any sort of flex whatsoever. There was no reducing or reduction of tickets to the side of the road, exclusively aimed at commercial motor vehicles. And last week was a real anomaly for me, since the entire COVID thing, based on the number of tickets that I received from around the province, it was probably upward of 30 or 40 new fresh cases. The unfortunate thing with speeding, Chris, as it relates to CVUR, is at 1 kilometer an hour over, it starts at 2 CVUR points, as opposed to demerit points for the driver's side start at 16 kilometers an hour over the limit is 3 demerit points. So it jumps from 0 to 3 at the 16 kilometer mark and over, and it escalates from there. For the CVUR side of things, it starts at 1 kilometer an hour over is 2 CVUR points, and it goes upwards of there from 21 and upwards, 21 kilometers an hour over the posted limit is 5 CVUR points. So it's exceptionally damaging any sort of speeding ticket to a carrier, and undoubtedly can affect the overall violation rate.
I want you to say that again, that what I heard was that the CVUR points for the carrier are not equal to CVUR points for, or points for the driver. Can you just go over that one more time?
Correct. There's a discrepancy with the demerit points and the CVUR points, which means that, last week, to give you specific examples, certain MTO officers, given the fact that it was a blitz week, I had 3 tickets that were all under 10 kilometers an hour, not reduced by the officer. Now, what I mean by that is that an officer operates on full discretion, at least the police officer side of things do, and I believe the MTO officers can also, although they don't often exercise discretion, they can. Meaning that when an officer writes a ticket for anything less than 16 kilometers an hour, so from 1 kilometer an hour over to 16 kilometers an hour over, it has 0 demerit points for a driver. However, the CVUR points kick in at 1 kilometer an hour over the limit, and they start at 2. There is no 0 or 1. It starts at 2 CVUR points for being 1 kilometer an hour over, and it escalates from there. The maximum is 5 CVUR points for any given speeding ticket, and that's for anything greater than 21 kilometers an hour over the posted limit.
So, and when we were talking yesterday, I had a speeding ticket for one of my clients, and it was 10 kilometers over the posted speed limit, not reduced, but 10 kilometers over. And right. So that's going to be how many points?
That's going to be 2 for the carrier. But it also shows up on the driver's abstract, obviously, as well. But the CBUR points are far greater in terms of significance to the company as opposed to the driver. A driver's primary concern, and I deal with drivers on a daily basis and have for the past 8 years, they're more concerned about their own well-being, and it's certainly not a conflict of interest. I mean, a conviction is a conviction registered, and if you opt to pay that ticket for the 10Ks over, the company is saddling itself with 2 CBUR points for the maximum allowable 24-month period that they're going to be affected by those points.
All right, so how has COVID affected your company, your job, and defending clients in court? Because from what I understand right now, the courts, for this type of thing at least, are closed.
Well, Chris, we're going to call this the meat of our interview because I knew this is what you were really itching to get to, and I can't blame you, because this time of COVID has been exceptionally and will continue to be exceptionally beneficial to carriers and drivers alike who opted to challenge their tickets. What we have is a 24-month clock, which starts ticking the second the ticket is written. So even if, like the ticket we were speaking about last week with the carrier that got one for 10 over, obviously in the driver's name, even if we just file that ticket, which we're unable to do right now because the courts have been closed from March 15th, and as of right now, it's September 14th is the reopening date. However, my sources from the inside of the court are telling me that it will likely, that they're not really in shape to do anything until about mid-November. So as of right now, we already have created a window just by not paying the ticket of approximately 6 months that are going to come right off that 24-month period because the clock starts ticking the moment the ticket was written. So you can't file or defend a ticket when the courts are not open. Obviously, with COVID, there's great concern about the greater good of society, and they're trying to figure out a way in which to safely operate the courthouses across the province. So in essence, what we have is I don't want to say it's a holiday for carriers and drivers, but we certainly have a flex period where nothing is going to be added or of any sort of significance to one's abstract, and that's for the company as well as the driver. So we have a nice frame of which we'll have points coming off the back end of a carrier's abstract that are going to hit the 24-month expiration date and come off. And we've already created a gap, which is going to give us a significant amount of time before any courthouse is really in any position to deal with the matter. So in essence, with that 24-month window being cut down by COVID, unexpectedly, of course, but it's a great benefit to carriers right now to really kind of get their beans in a row, I guess, so to speak, to make sure that they're running is optimally at the end of this period, that we can really see some significant increases in overall violation rates coming down. And that's a fantastic windfall for a carrier to experience, as it does, we know, affect their insurance rates and how they're viewed by the MTO, et cetera. So there's, right now it's it's one of the upsides of the unfortunate, you know, reality of COVID. The other aspect we have, Chris, is the fact that enforcement's down. I'm currently running at about 30% enforcement of what it normally was compared to prior to March 15th. Last year was one of my busiest years in terms of number of tickets filed and number of cases fought on behalf of carriers. And right now, officers are only writing for the most serious of offenses. That's from my understanding, that's a directive in most departments. And only serious collisions and overweight infractions when they go through a scale are really being enforced. And for the most part, it's very beneficial to everybody.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I mean, it, quite honestly, if I was a cop, do I want to be pulling over everybody like I normally would and exposing myself and my family and my extended family to COVID at the moment where, as you say, unless it's a very serious offense, thank God we have the police to literally to police society, because some people need policing. And for you and I and most of us, we're capable of making a mistake, and that's when we get a speeding ticket typically. It's not intentional, it's a human error, and we're driving along. So how you know, you're talking about the courts being open September, somewhere between September and November. There's going to be a huge backlog of dealing with these tickets after the situation gets open. Do you have a feeling? I'm certainly not asking you for an actual estimate, but do you have a feeling how long it might take? For instance, the speeding ticket that I called you about, do you have an idea how long it might take before that speeding ticket in particular would get in front of the court once the court's open?
Well, that's a fantastic question, Chris, and right now you're absolutely correct, and I think a strategically minded paralegal representative can certainly drag out a case significantly right now. But let's stick with the framework of the 10 over speeding ticket you gave me as an example earlier. If that one theoretically is in a court that has early resolution, and you set it for early resolution, and you order the evidence, the disclosure from the officer ahead of that early resolution date,
it's not
inconceivable.
Before you carry on, explain, because I've never heard that term before, early resolution. I mean, I've heard of it, but I don't know it. What is it?
In the trial stream, you always have generally, you have two trial streams, for example, or two streams in which a ticket can fall. You have part one offenses, which are written by an officer at the side of the road, and they're given to the driver, either for the driver or and or the company, and they have a price to pay. They have a set fine as well as a total payable, which is inclusive of what's called a victim fine surcharge. Those are called part ones. Generally speaking, about half the courthouses in the province, on the back of each ticket, you always have three options. Many courts have what's called early resolution, which is option number two in a lot of cases, and it's a chance to speak to a prosecutor before a matter is set for trial, and it allows several things to happen. A, it can delay the end result of a ticket significantly by weeks or certainly months, and during COVID, I'm telling you, it's going to be months for certain. And it allows you a chance to resolve it, usually at a very preferential resolution, which is advantage to both the driver and the company, or the company, depending on what the situation is. And right now with COVID, they're trying to push for early resolution because they want to get some of these cases off their docket to avoid the backlog that you inevitably spoke about. But undoubtedly, there's going to be a huge backlog of cases. And if, in theory, all those matters were set for trial, they're going to have to pick and choose which battles they want to go to, because they're not going to be able to get to all of them in a timely fashion. Now, I'm expecting many of the cases that I've filed to not come up until well into 2021. So let's, in theory, if a ticket was written in early March of 2020, this year, before COVID unfolded upon us, then it's not inconceivable with certain courts, we're not going to get a court date for 12, 16 months down the road.
And that
in itself is a huge benefit to a carrier and a driver, as the amount of applicable time left for it to have an effect on a CVOR or an abstract of any sort is already greatly reduced and very advantageous to us.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, the MTO, the insurance industry are looking at clients who have conditional ratings. And so this is a huge opportunity for someone, certainly if they were conditional because they went over the 70% threshold, huge opportunity for them to get it down below the 60% for 6 months, so that they would automatically go back to satisfactory unaudited. For those who failed an audit, once your numbers get down low enough, the MTO, I don't know if this has become policy yet, but there was a beta program being tested. I don't know if you've heard of it, ASRA, Alternative Risk Assessment Program or something. It's an acronym, right, and I forget what it is. But if they meet the qualifications, and one of the qualifications was the overall violation rate had to be below a certain threshold, then they submit paperwork. And it would be reviewed by MTO, and then their rating would be changed. That's a huge benefit. Once your numbers get low enough, this could have, I never thought of this before, that COVID could have some positive outcomes.
Absolutely. Whether it's deserved or not, the only hope, I suppose, Chris, you're absolutely right in saying all those things. The the numerical value of an overall violation rate could come down just by default, given that there's far less enforcement going on, as well as the elapsed time of which certain charges and points are going to fall off the back end of a company's abstract. The hopes would be that the companies that were already in that precarious predicament of being in a situation where their threshold was higher than the MTO wants it to be, they might be the beneficiaries of something that is not necessarily deserved, but just numerically because of the value system, it's going to come down and put them in a position where they're no longer in a bind with the MTO. My hopes would be that these carriers that are on that cusp would get their act together and get their standard operating procedures in place, et cetera, to ensure that when we get back to a place of normal enforcement levels or whatever that may look like, at least they can be in a position where they're no longer on the MTO radar, so to speak. But that remains to be seen, and it would definitely have an impact on their insurance ratings and a whole litany of other things that would be beneficial to them.
Yeah, I mean, with insurance companies putting more companies out of business every month, and I think more than the MTO is at the moment.
Absolutely.
I really would encourage people to, first of all, fight all tickets. While their level is coming down, their overall violation rate, hire somebody like a safety consultant if it's needed and get their ship in order. A little bit of self-serving message, but they don't have to hire me. Just any good qualified safety consultant would be an asset to a fleet, as well as a good qualified paralegal. And by the way, one of the things I would encourage our listeners and viewers to think about is, the paralegal qualified? There's a lot of really good paralegals out there, but there are not a lot that are educated in CVOR and commercial vehicle violations. You know, I never recommend a paralegal who may be very good at fighting, typical Highway Traffic Act violations, because they just don't understand commercial vehicles. So, last word to you, kind of. What else do we need to have our viewers hear about paralegals, COVID, the courts, whatever? Kind of a toss-up. What do they need to hear?
Well, I think right now the important thing is just realizing that we're in a stalled pattern right now. The courts are officially closed, and the Attorney General keeps announcing new dates. It's been announced twice so far, where they were going to attempt to reopen in July, and that fell to the wayside. Now they're saying September 14th. The biggest thing I think you can come away with after seeing this podcast would be to get your ship in order, as you said earlier, and to, if you have any questions, I mean, any reasonable and reputable paralegal doesn't charge for any consultation. I know, Chris, you're available these days as well to help carriers get into compliance, et cetera, and I think there's no greater time to do these things. We have a situation that we can't control, and I don't know how it's looking next door in the U.S. I know the numbers aren't great, but I certainly think Canadian carriers are doing a good, excellent job overall, making sure that we have our fridges are filled with groceries, et cetera. But I think for carriers that are watching, is if you have some downtime right now, use it wisely to get everything that was historically plaguing your company to married to higher insurance rates, et cetera, or you know, a standard operating procedure that you never quite got around to tying the loose ends up on, reach out to Chris or reach out to a paralegal if you have any questions. Their free consultations are mandated to us from the Law Society, so we don't charge anything to speak to you. But I think it's a great time to get these ducks in a row, and when the world resumes, we can all be in a better position for better insurance rates and just the knowledge of knowing that we're running the best ship we can possibly put forward.
Yeah, well said. I think that's a great way to wrap it up and end it. Joel, thanks so much for coming on the Dog on a Trucking podcast.
Well, it's been an honor, Chris. I can't thank you enough. It's always been a pleasure working alongside you and with certain carriers, and it's nice to finally get on the show. So thank you for having me.
Hey. I forgot we have sound effects that we can use too.
Who knew?
Thanks, Joel. We'll talk soon.
For sure. Thanks, Chris. Be well.
I hope you loved the show as much as I did. Please leave us a like, a thumbs up, a review, a comment, a rating if it is in your heart. Thank you so much. And I do really appreciate your time. And join us again next week for another exciting interview.